home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And I am Rob Watson, and I want to thank Garrett Miller for that intro. We have an incredible show tonight. We have a panel that is an all-star, intelligent, connected group of people that knows everything there is to know about the recent transgender ban by the Trump administration. We're going to pick their brains on that, get the latest information on what has been happening and what is likely to happen. We're also going to talk to them about nuclear threats, because that is coming out of the White House as well. And since they are all connected to military intelligence in their reporting and their advocacy, they should have some opinions on that. And last but not least, but mostly, we're going to talk to them about a president unhinged who seems completely, completely out of his element and out of control. Before I do that, before I bring these three individuals on, I want to read three quotes just to kind of underscore the point. So here's quote number one. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which parlays needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. In every dark hour of our nation's life, national life, a leadership of frankness and vigor has met with that understanding and support of the people themselves, which is essential to victory. That quote was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Another quote. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this. A modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with the new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. Is there no other way the world may live? That quote, Dwight Eisenhower. And then this. I have great respect for the community. I think I've had great support, or I've had great support from that community. I got lots of votes, but the transgender, the military is working on it now. It's been a very difficult situation, and I think I'm doing a lot of people a favor by coming out and just saying it. As you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military, and I think I'm doing the military a great favor. That quote is Donald Trump. So yeah, no FDR, no Dwight Eisenhower. We have Donald Trump, and we're going to talk about that now. First up, I want to welcome to the show Brody Levesque. Brody, welcome.
Hey, good evening, Rob. How are you?
I am doing well. Brody, you have been you are the man with the finger on the pulse on all these different issues. And, I mean, anything you want to say really quick before I bring the other guests on about what has happened this week?
In terms of overalls, the ratcheting up of the rhetoric between President Trump and the North Korean government has gotten not only U.S. allies, but also those that normally would be opposed to U.S. policy very concerned. Earlier today, the government in Beijing issued a statement through the widely read Global Times, which is published by the Communist Party's People's Daily. Essentially, Reuters is reporting that if North Korea launches an attack that threatens the United States, then China should stay neutral. But if the United States attacks first and tries to overthrow North Korea's government, China will stop them. And this is according to the Chinese state-run newspaper. The problem that we're running into is that this is a very dangerous time in global affairs. This man is inherently incompetent, and he has absolutely no business being able to effectively launch the American strategic nuclear inventory. And as was pointed out earlier today by the Washington Post, it has been pointed out repeatedly by others, there is no binding a president of the United States, any president, when it comes down to use of the strategic nuclear forces of the United States. Having this type of person sitting in the Oval Office with the type of rhetoric that he's been using and the type of obviously non-comprehensive of the complexities of foreign relations is quite frightening and quite concerning. And there are now policymakers that are privately saying that they think that the United States is headed into a point that they may not be able to walk back from.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Brody. I feel much, much better. Okay. That was a joke.
Trying
to lighten it up a little bit. I mean, it's actually very terrifying. It is a worst case scenario for those of us who were not for Donald Trump from the very beginning. This was kind of the doomsday scenario that we painted early on, and it is actually quite sobering and terrifying to have it pretty much come to fruition. Before we move on, though, I want to bring our other guests on. Welcoming to the show for the first time, Karen Oakham, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you on. I can't even tell you. So the honor is ours. You have been, among other things, I mean, you've been actually quoted as one of the greatest LGBT journalists on the scene, a title I would actually have you share with Brody Levesque, but don't tell him that.
I don't know who said that. I would, you know, I'd walk that back.
No. I found it. It was on the internet. So it is yours.
It must be true.
That title. But you have been the one who has broken the story on the transgender ban and have been the go-to journalist on all the happenings. And I'm going to pick your brain on that in just a minute. But before I do, I want to bring on our third guest, also an incredible pedigree. Matt Thorne is the executive director of OutServe and has been on our show before. And we didn't scare him away, and he's back. Matt, welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It takes a lot to scare me, by the way.
Okay. Well, I would, you know, given what has happened the past few weeks, I think you've pretty much proven that. And quite frankly, the fact we're all sitting comfortably in chairs with Donald Trump at the helm here, I think we've all shown up. So that's been very good. Kathy, if you want to, Matt and Brody were on, and I would encourage any listeners who are hearing us for the first time to go listen to that particular podcast, where they talked about how the transgender ban came about in the first place, the situation that happened in Congress that was then foisted over to the willing hands of Donald Trump, and he sent out those horrendous tweets early one morning. Can you kind of pick it up from there and tell us what's happened since then?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to note that I'm the reporter on this, but there are a lot of other people who are contributing to my knowledge on this. I mean, this is not my independent thinking. I have sources who are very concerned about what's going on. And so the credit actually goes to the sources. I'm the reporter who's writing this and following up. So that's really my role in this. I don't want to, you know, take credit where it's not deserved, albeit I thank you for giving it to me. So what the deal is, let's just take a look for a second at, you know, you just read Donald Trump's statement from today. And he says, you know, as you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military. And I think I'm doing the military a great favor. And as you remember, the July tweets said that he'd talk to my generals. Well, the truth of the matter is that because in June of 2016, Defense Secretary Ash Carter lifted the ban on open trans service. So people came out, and for 1 year, transgender people have been serving without incident. There is no confusion. The confusion.
Well, there is confusion, but it's not where he says it is.
There's that's exactly right. The confusion is, who are my generals that he's talking to? Because those tweets blindsided the Secretary of Defense, blindsided the Joint Chiefs of Staff, blindsided the senior officials at the Pentagon. Who are the generals he's talking about? I rather suspect that some of them are retired and at the Family Research Council. That's my suspicion, that he's talking about those generals. But this is a tragedy, because even though we don't know what's going to happen with that lawsuit that was just filed by NCLR and who else filed it with NCLR? NCLR and well, anyway,
Glad
based in Boston, the LGBTQ legal advocates and defenders. I'm sorry, I forgot. The thing about their lawsuit that they do bring out is that harm is happening right now to serving active duty transgender service members, including in theater. And when Trump says, as the commander-in-chief says today, that he thinks that he's doing the military a great favor, what is he telling those currently serving active duty service members, let alone all the, you know, the trans people who want to enter the military, not only to serve their country, but maybe because the military is the biggest employer and they were hoping to get out of a dire economic situation and join the military and see the world and do the GI Bill and get an education and get a good job and join the middle class.
Right.
That's what the military used to do.
Yeah, and I can tell you from having come from a military family and being the son of a military officer, that many people are joining because that is just simply a value they have. I mean, we're raised.
That's right, a family tradition. Me too.
Yeah.
My father was a colonel in the Air Force. He was a lifer. At one point, he was head of procurement. We were stationed on Strategic Air Command bases. So when this whole nuclear threat came up, I mean, it was a visceral memory for me, the duck and cover days. I mean, I'm
right.
that old, so.
I'm right there with you. So Karen, being the daughter of a military man and knowing that what your father served under, and I'm sure Matt and Brody have connections as well, just from that spirit, I mean, isn't that almost from a patriotic American value of being part of society, isn't that a horrible message that is being sent to transgender people when they're essentially being told they're a confusion rather than they're a patriotic hero?
Well, it's not just it's a massive insult to the service in and of itself. I mean, you know, the service has a value. You do not leave anyone behind. When you're in a foxhole, the person next to you is your brother, is your God, is your friend, is everything. You know, that's the kind of bond that happens, and it survives. And this man who is now president, you have to remember, yes, he had a stint in some military academy, but he never served. So he might be, you know, you dangle a general in front of him and he goes ooh and ah, but he has no clue what good order and discipline is. He has no clue what the service is about at all, let alone the core value of patriotism, where you put country and service, you know, above your own life, for heaven's sake. You know, and you will give your life for the person next to you. I mean, it's insulting not only to service members, but to allies, to commanders who have, integrated LGBT people, just as you were talking about Eisenhower. Well, Truman and Eisenhower integrated the military with people of color. And they said exactly the same thing. I don't want to shower with a person of color. They used a different term. You know, same terminology.
Right, right. And very well said. Your points are right on. Brody, I think you had a point.
Well, I wanted to go back to something Karen had said. She had referred to his generals. And I'd like to go to the president's statement. I'm going to take this one particular sentence. It's been a very confusing issue for the military, and I think I'm doing the military a great favor. We've heard this rhetoric before, and I think Matt would agree with me that during the time period of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, this was a talking point for the Christian right, in particular Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness, Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council, Brian Fisher from the American Family Association, and Dobson from Focus on the Family. The phrase, it's been a very confusing issue. They keep coming back to putting words in people's mouths, and a lot of the rhetoric that we see comes right around that, and it's from those people. We've also noted that in the middle of May, during the fight over the Sessions policy, there was a letter that was drafted, and Karen can speak of the particulars on this. I saw the letter. I think Matt saw it as well. And most of the signatures on it were from retired military personnel that were very much opposed to open LGBT service of any kind, going even back to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The reason I'm pointing this out is because Trump has infused his White House in the last 2 months in particular with meetings and get-togethers with members of the evangelical right. And there have been statements and public pronouncements made by the evangelical right talking about what they're doing for this president, what this president is doing for them. And this is the type of language that they use. And I see this as very much an influence coming from the evangelical right being reflected in the president's choice of verbiage and rhetoric. Matt, would you agree with me?
Oh, yeah, fundamentally. I mean, so I would also point out that, you know, the statements that the president has made both today and then in the tweets about, you know, today in particular about doing a service, you know, doing a great deal of service for the military in announcing this policy. The military, the Department of Defense spent a year studying this issue before they lifted the ban. A year. If there was an issue, the service chiefs would have never signed off on it to begin with. And we would probably still be fighting to try to get as it is. To make that shift, it was not just leaders of the Department of Defense that said the direction we want to go. The civilian defense also intimately and intrinsically talk with the service, each of the services, to make sure that they are on board with whatever changes are going to happen at the Department of Defense. So I think that this president is just showing a massive disconnection to how our military works and how they go about deliberating and making changes like lifting the ban on transgender service.
Right. Now, one thing that part of the quote that we've been talking about here, he makes reference to the military is quote unquote working on it. My understanding is that this ban and the directive that was coming out of the White House has been somewhat watered down. Is that true? And if it has been, is his reference to them, quote unquote, working on it, referring to the fact that they are actually changing to something else? Or is he trying to ramp it back up like he did with his rhetoric about North Korea today? Karen, if you want to address that, or gentlemen, either of you.
Well, I'll take the first stab at it. As a reporter, I'd say we don't know, and we don't know. So, number one, rumor has it, which has not been confirmed, that, or at least it hasn't been confirmed directly to me, but it's my understanding that after there was so much pushback around, the original story that came out Friday, August 4th, that the White House counsel, which also had been trying to tell the Trump, trying to tell Trump, look, you don't do this, you're inviting lawsuits, but he wanted to go ahead and do this. So they watered down the language of the policy. The original policy that I wrote about that Friday had passed muster with the White House counsel's office and was sitting there ready to be delivered to the Pentagon. One of the things that almost everybody I know of wanted to happen was for General Kelly, now chief of staff, to essentially kill it. Save Secretary of Defense Mattis any time in trouble and just spike it in the White House. That didn't happen, but they were sensitive to the backlash that happened and hence watered down the language. So as I understand it now, because the language has been revised, there's a new draft form of the guidance that is sitting in the White House. The Pentagon, the last I heard, which was sometime today, had not yet received any guidance. So it's still sitting in a draft that way. I do think that that what Trump was trying to signal was to his Tony Perkins, Heritage Foundation, Family Research Council, all those people that we were just talking about, that it is, the process is continuing because he doesn't want backlash from those people. He doesn't want to think that he's letting those religious right people down. And he will be letting them down with the watered-down guidance, just as his executive order on the Johnson Amendment let them down when that was watered down and just didn't clearly kill the Johnson Amendment. So I think that there will be some interesting backlash from the religious right if this ever gets out of the White House to begin with.
Wow.
Guys?
And Matt, Matt, if a watered-down version does come out that is, for example, if the existing transgender personnel get to stay, but they lose all their medical and, things that are really bad but not an outright ban, will that still be an opportunity for lawsuits?
Well, yes, it will not only be an opportunity for lawsuit, but my reporting has already shown that, look, we're facing the possibility of a nuclear war here. Secretary of Defense Mattis has other things on his plate. He's already said, I don't want to deal with anything anything but what's in front of us with this military situation. That's number one. And my reporting also suggests that he's sent out to his commanders that he doesn't want any changes in personnel other than disciplinary changes, you know, what's already in process, like discharges or other disciplinary matters. So Kelly already knows this. The generals already know this. Even if it goes to the Pentagon, it's going to be held in stasis because there are more important things that are happening, and he needs all hands on deck.
Well, and speaking of the more important things happening, is there a backlash against Trump? Let me backtrack it a little bit. His rhetoric that has come out, it went way over the top and a direct target towards North Korea, almost inciting an action on their part, or and if they intended to do an action, almost inspiring them to take it to the next level, which could, selfishly from an American perspective, put hundreds of thousands of troops in Guam in danger. And Matt, you particularly being an advocate for military, is there a backlash from within the military that he is endangering our troops unnecessarily?
Well, yeah, I mean, to Karen's point, I mean, you know, saddling the Department of Defense with a personnel issue in the middle of, you know, for, I think, a nice way of saying it, heated tensions between North Korea is fundamentally and strategically stupid. I don't have a better way of saying that. You know, DOD doesn't need to be going and figuring out a way to expel trans service members. You know, there was a great cartoon and I can't remember which paper it was in, but there's a warhead that's, you know, about to hit Washington, D.C., and the president says, you know, I thought we could stop that. And one of the generals is saying to him in the cartoon that, you know, well, we had to get rid of, you know, we had to get rid of our trans service member who worked on that project. So he doesn't have a fundamental understanding that, you know, our trans troops are not in just some little pocket, you know, in Virginia or in the Pentagon. We have transgender troops that are stationed all around the world, some who work on elite teams that would potentially be engaged in this or whatever action is taken. So I think it's really this is reckless and careless on his part. And then to go to your other point about a lawsuit, yes, we have – any slight alteration to the current policy that is in effect is discriminatory on its foundation, period. Sidelining a particular group of individuals on the basis of their gender identity, and, you know, you mentioned healthcare as one aspect of that, is fundamentally discriminatory, and we will sue the administration if they do any slight alteration to what is currently in place.
Let me weigh in a little bit on readiness. Right now, let's talk about readiness, and I'm going to address what Karen just said and what Matt just said. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Joseph Dunford, is currently on his way to Honolulu. The Pentagon has characterized this trip as a previously scheduled trip. The Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, is actually traveling in the West at this point. And it is not likely that the Pentagon is going to take the initiative to change any kind of policy at all whatsoever while both of the bosses are out of town. And more importantly, what they're dealing with in terms of the comings and goings with this Korean crisis. I should also note that sources in the Pentagon have told me that although the defense posture of the United States has not been altered, the readiness posture of the United States has, in fact, been altered by major command, in particular in the Pacific Basin, which would be Commander Pacific and, of course, Commander Pacific Fleet. So there are things going on that I don't think that the U.S. military, particularly the Secretary of Defense, and the White House Chief of Staff, being a former Marine General, would understand this intuitively. that they are really going to want to mess around with this issue. Again, I think to Karen's point, the fact that Trump is making this noise is, again, he's throwing red meat at his evangelical base that he's been closeting himself with. And I will add, this also includes the Vice President of the United States, very much so in that category, for the last
right.
2 months.
May I also add another point that we haven't really raised, but I think is actually pertinent? One of the things that Lindsey Graham said, Senator Lindsey Graham said that he'd talked to Trump, and Trump had this kind of casual thing, oh, well, if we go to war and people die, it'll be 1,000 people will die over there, not over here. I think that's inherently racist because it's saying, quite apart from the 330,000 Americans, by the way, of all colors, et cetera, that we have, you know, living in Guam and Japan and South Korea, but it is totally suggesting that Asian people don't count, that they're expendable. There is such cultural insensitivity that even more so than whether or not, you know, there's a they have a nuclear, you know, they can fit a nuclear warhead on the tip of an ICBM and it can reach here in Los Angeles. Even more so than that is the concern that they don't have ambassadors, that we don't have. Trump doesn't have any ambassadors in South Korea or Japan who can say, listen, the way you're talking is mano a mano or is, you know, the bellicosity is not being received in the same way as on a playground. They're going to think that you're coming after them. This is a different culture. They hear things differently, not the way you think they hear them. So, you know, and his dismissiveness of and saying thank you to Putin for kicking out 775 diplomatic corps and just saying, well, I want to thank him because, you know, we just cut down on the payroll. They don't have to come back. I mean, what about all those diplomatic people who are in place who are going to be working with our military to try to tamp things down or respond? They're demoralized now, too. So there's so many different layers to this.
Brody, could you do me a favor and give us a, because you and I have talked about this before, just kind of a snapshot of what a simple nuclear exchange, even a little tiny one, would cost us in terms of human lives?
The figures that I got earlier today from the Center for Strategic Studies told me that a limited exchange of strategic nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula would essentially kill 12.5 million people instantly. This is mainly in the area of Seoul, South Korea, which is the South Korean capital. Additionally, there would be another 5 million collateral kills in North Korea itself. There would be a catastrophic loss of life in terms of U.S. military personnel along the 38th parallel. Should the North Koreans successfully get at least one or two missiles launched, and since they do have miniaturization capabilities, we are looking at devastation of life not only in Guam, but more than likely Japan as well, especially if they were targeting U.S. military bases or even civilian population centers such as, well, for example, Tokyo. I mean, the loss of life would be catastrophic. In addition, you would also have ongoing long-term environmental catastrophe that, it basically puts global warming to a shame if it goes that way. It's an incredible thing, and the fact that this president isn't quite hearing that should be frightening. I should also need to point out, this is one of the other things that was pointed out to me earlier today in a roundtable discussion with editors in New York, there's no U.S. ambassador currently to South Korea. There's no U.S. ambassador to Japan, and there's no U.S. ambassador even to China. So what we're looking at is there's no representation and no one to tamp it down if it starts to get out of control. And so the more bluster you get out of the White House, the worse it gets. And Karen just accurately pointed something out. Trump does not have a fundamental understanding of culture and change and things apart from his really insular worldview. Keep in mind, this is a billionaire who has spent his entire life essentially in New York City. So his worldview has been limited to whatever he saw on Fox News. And that is extremely unhealthy. It's extremely ignorant. And it's also extremely dangerous. But to finish up your question, should there be a strategic exchange of nuclear weapons, you're probably looking at upwards of probably 35 million dead within the first 3 hours.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you, three of you, a hypothetical and let you respond. And I'm going to try to represent this as best I can, like I don't think it's complete and utter nonsense. So people who believe in Donald Trump might look at this situation and say, listen, North Korea has been, you know, this growing pain in the world side for a long time. George W. Bush identified as one of the three parts of his axis of evil. And the threat just keeps, you know, they keep coming back. And so maybe it's time we stop swatting at it and we come down with a big hammer. And that's really what Trump's doing. And let's see this carry out. What would your response to that point of view be?
Matt, you're closer to the military. What do you think?
Yeah, Matt, what's your point? I mean, your viewpoint.
So I apologize, Rob. You broke up a little bit on the middle part of your, or the end part of your question. Can you just repeat it for me?
Absolutely. I'm sort of paraphrasing people who feel that Trump is essentially solving a problem that no other president is really taking care of completely. And by being strong and coming down with a big hammer on them, that he will take care of it once and for all, where everybody else has let this continue. What would your response to that approach?
I understand that a lot of our country's perception in the military is like, you know, we want to go to war, we want to do this, we want to kind of, you know, get into the muck of things. The military, I mean, if you've listened to Secretary Mattis over the last, you know, 6 months that he's of his tenure, you know, the military is, the use of force is always a last resort. They don't want to use force unless they absolutely fundamentally have to, and that they're put in that position. And I don't think, and again, this is where this president has a disconnection and not a very good intellect or understanding of how the international community actually works together. So, you know, you've seen Secretary Mattis push, you know, we want to find a diplomatic solution. We want to find a diplomatic solution. And it's interesting the parallels that in how Trump talks about, you know, North Korea and the rhetoric around that and pushing that and the trans ban, right? Like, again, you have a fundamental disconnect here on your understanding of how these things work. He's looking at things from a hot, you know, button place and, you know, I'm irritated and somebody poked me and I'm going to fire back. You know, that's, he's reactionary. He's not thinking through what his policies or his words and how they're impactful on whatever subject that he's talking about, whether it's from the trans ban to North Korea. There's no thought process there. So with the military, you know, the military is very methodical and very strategic and very focused and very diligent in how it approaches the international community and how it approaches its own personnel policy. And this president is just massively throwing, essentially he's throwing a grenade in the tent, is the best phrase that I could use about it.
Well, it's good. I mean, it's actually very symbolic and probably apropos. Brody and Karen, what is Congress doing during all this? I know they've been, we last saw them when they were being queried about Russia and the Republicans were not happy about it, but they weren't being as strong and forthright about it as they could be. None of them were okay with ideas of him firing special counsel. They've defended Sessions in terms of not being fired. What are they doing now under this threat of potential war and the transgender ban that they actually voted down themselves?
Brody, you want to take that, and then I'll come back with mine?
Okay. There's two components to this. Of course, the first component is the fact that you have both houses on their late summer reset. The people that I've spoken to in the Democratic leadership are extremely concerned, more so than their Republican counterparts, principally because they see Trump as a loose cannon or a grenade launcher, as was just pointed out by Matt. The Republicans haven't viewed this just yet as a critical need area, and this is a case based on public statements that have been made by the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John McCain, and of course comments that were made earlier today by South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. I think that in many ways they're not understanding, you know, the severity of this, and I think that in a lot of ways they're not understanding that, you know, Trump is literally waiting for, you know, just any excuse. You know, under the War Powers Act of 1973, and I think this is something that the lawmakers also are probably not completely understanding, is the fact that the president has the ability within minutes to make use of the American strategic missiles if he so desires. And, you know, there's been some congressional outcry on that and some congressional calls for limitations of the presidential power. But the reality here is, let us say that the North Koreans do, in fact, launch those four missiles against Guam, even if they splash in the water, Trump takes that the wrong way, and he tells a American strategic nuclear submarine to turn North Korea into a sea of glass. There is quite literally nothing that could be done to prevent that, because if a person standing in the way, the president said, no, we're not going to let you do that, there's no choice. You'll get fired, and then it'll just keep going. So there's no safeguard to that. And this is the fundamental problem here, is that at least the Republican leadership doesn't seem to really grasp and have a coherent thought here in terms of understanding the reality of that situation. This is a clear threat. The Democrats are starting to see it. Representative Ted Lieu of Los Angeles, as a matter of fact, has called for a limitation to the War Powers Act of 73 to prevent the president from doing this. But, you know, it'll be a little bit too late if it happens already.
Right.
So that's kind of where right now Congress is, of course, the biggest problem is they're out, you know, and it's one of those things that, you know, what are you going to do? This guy decides to start a war next week from the 16th hole of the golf course. You know, everybody's out scattered. You know, you can't get
right.
Congress together that fast. You know, so this is really serious business here, and this is a real serious problem. Matt's right. My Pentagon people are telling me the Pentagon doesn't want to go anywhere near this. The Chinese are the biggest influence here, and Beijing really does not want to see this happen. But Beijing made it clear today that if North Korea attacks U.S. soil, then China will stay neutral, okay? But long-term effects, you know?
Right,
so
right.
That's,
no, yeah,
that's my take on it, you know?
Yeah, you
well,
pointed that out. Karen, what you had thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'll just add to what the guys have said, that the biggest, you know, ironically, the biggest threat to our, you know, our territory right now are the 2018 elections. These guys are out here being, you know, concerned that they're going to be primaried over failing to repeal and replace Obamacare, and that seems to be what has their attention more so than the possible threat of nuclear war. They are looking at what's directly in front of them. Now, some of the senators have gotten a little upset at Trump taking pot shots at you know, the Senate Majority Leader, and they've tweeted something out about that. But for the most part, you know, they're scared of the Freedom Caucus. They're scared of whatever version of the Tea Party exists in their state. And that seems to be the one thing that holds them together. There is no Republican Party. There are factions. You know, nobody
yeah.
listens to the establishment Republicans anymore. I mean, the media does because, you know, we've been around. If McCain says, look, I have a plan for Afghanistan, our, you know, our general there says he needs more troops, here's my plan, as if he can go forward with it just because he plays a role on the Senate Armed Services Committee. You know, we already know what Trump thinks of McCain. So, I mean, you know, so there's the establishment Republicans, then there are the ones who, anyway, you get the point, you know. That,
right.
And the House is just crazy anyway. I mean, Paul Ryan was supposed to be the savior after Boehner quit, knowing what the hell he was facing and that these are, you know, it's like herding cats. And each individual cat was mad, you know, and pissed off. And Ryan has, you know, frankly turned into a feckless leader. So
feral
there's
cats,
that.
Karen.
But the
feral
other
cats.
Part of this
yeah,
is
exactly.
that there's no leadership among the Democrats. You know,
sure.
it's like they come, you know, Nancy Pelosi
right.
and Chuck Schumer are terrific, okay? I'm not, but the Democratic Party is also at war with itself. Bernie Sanders is touring the country talking about single payer, and all the Bernie-crats are talking about primarying, you know, Democratic incumbents and they are outright saying that they want to be the Democratic version of the Tea Party. And we saw what happened with that. So all this business about taking back Congress, of the Democrats taking back Congress in 2018, is also very threatened, let alone all the gerrymandering that, you know, makes it
right.
near impossible anyway. So, you know, we are in a constitutional crisis whether we have a war or not. You know, our democracy is literally at stake here, and nobody has connected the dots to kind of come out and say that. Who is the leader of this country?
Yeah.
What
no,
are
great
we
point.
Doing?
I want to take that one step further because I hear exactly what you're saying and totally agree with the lack of leadership, the lack of progress, you know, from a governmental or political standpoint. But I see something also odd going on, just my observation. I want you guys to give a take on this. But what do you think the spirit of the American people in general is around these two issues now? And where is that spirit going to go should Trump actually do something? And the reason I'm asking that is if you go out on social media, you go on Facebook, you go on places where everybody is showing up in hordes to offer their opinions and their viewpoints and everything else, it is a wasteland in terms of talking about any of this. No one seems to care. No one seems to care that the president is threatening a major nuclear war beyond anything we've ever seen. nobody seems to care that, you know, life as we know it could be threatened. It just, it's progress as usual. And my second part of that question is, should we have some sort of action take place? What has happened in history, whether the majority of the country is particularly for it or not, there seems to be this patriarch spirit that rises up in us to support a president who makes the decision to go to war. Do you think that would happen in any form in this case? That's kind of a part one and part two.
I think before Matt answers, because I know he wants to say something, I'm going to say this. Should this president carry out what he has so firmly committed himself to doing, he's no longer threatening it, he's now committed to doing it. This man is going to start a war. He's committed to it. Come hell or high water, this man is going to get the United States involved in a war in Asia. He's committed to it. Unless the United States military and the United States political leadership of its Congress recognize that fact for the clear and present danger that represents to the United States, and as long as the American population continues along the path of absolute ignorance and complacency, then your country's got a big problem. It's so bad that my country of Canada, my prime minister, was smart enough to dispatch, you know, an envoy to North Korea. And Great Britain, France, Germany, other members of the European Union, even Russia is starting to pay attention to this. There is a sense of ignorance and complacency. It's almost as if the American people think that this is all just one big reality show, and then after the commercial break, it'll get resolved. And I have news for you, not this time. Matt?
Right.
Well, I think the reality show analogy is interesting, because I think that you are watching a public that has just become so disenfranchised with our political system and just not engaged at all. So I don't think that they really comprehend the severity of the current situation and where it could potentially go. You know, to the reality show point, you know, we've watched Donald Trump on Celebrity Apprentice, you know, his apprentice show for, you know, how many seasons, and it's just a disconnection. We've just become just so embodied into this being a normalcy, you know, like this erraticness is just becoming such a normalcy. And I don't think that people look beyond that and say, this has real world implications to it. And that is a very dangerous place for the public to be. And even more so for our political system to be in. But you kind of see that with Congress, to Karen's point as well, you know, with a lack of singular figure on the Democratic side and the Speaker and Leader McConnell, who have no control over their caucuses as much as they like to think they do. And I'd also like to go back to another point from one of the previous questions we had. You know, we are dealing with two individuals, Kim Jong-un and President Trump, that are escalators, right? And when I mentioned earlier that he's not looking at the broader picture, you know, he insulted China multiple times over the last month. They are the key player right now in this situation. It does not do us any good to insult them. You know, they're a world competitor for us, one of the ones who can actually tamp down this conflict that's developing. And instead, he goes out and he insults them. And this is the lack of knowledge that he has when it comes to international relations, period, and fundamentally. We have to work with our international partners to de-escalate this situation, and he just does not see that. This is Kim Jong-un saying, you know, I'm going to fire a missile. They've always been a rogue nation that to test the limits and their boundaries. And instead of being you know, collaborative and opening and talking to China or talking to Russia and talking, you know, to Brody's point, Canada, you know, how do we de-escalate the situation? I'm going to make a statement that says we're going to bring all fire and fury to North Korea. Well, then in turn, the other escalator is going to come back and say, you know, well, I'm going to fire 4 missiles over the coast, over Guam. So we're just in a disillusionment, I think, as a public, or not all of us, but a great deal of our country is just in a very big disillusionment. We're in a reality show that's just not stopping.
Right.
True.
Right. I want to take you guys back.
I actually have a different point of view, if I may, very quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
First of all, about China, one of the unspoken pieces of that is, let's remember, China holds our debt. If they wanted to say to the United States, yo, you got to pay us back everything, all the trillion, whatever trillion it is, like $3 trillion or whatever, that you owe us, and we want it now. You know, it's like Donald Trump has gone through so many bankruptcies, maybe it won't impact him, but it'll impact everybody else. So China is not just some country to be insulted. They could ruin us and create a worldwide depression. So there's that economic, nuclear war hanging over us as well. Secondly, regarding the people, I hear what both of you are saying. I understand the three of you are saying, and I understand what you're talking about. But what I'm seeing on my feeds and what I've saw from the day after the inauguration with the Women's March and what I've seen at the town hall meetings and what I've seen with the group that all the different resist groups, invisible or indivisible groups, is that there's this, you know, people want to be active. They want to respond. It was the people that killed all the different efforts to repeal Obamacare. So, you know, whether it was massive phone calls or showing up the town halls or offices or whatever. So that energy is out there. But what is missing is the leadership to say, okay, this is what's happening, this is why it's important, and this is what we need you to do. And that's missing.
Very well studied. Barry, before you jump in, we have literally 2 minutes left. I wanted to capture any other additional points on the TransCam that is happening that people should know about that we have not covered so far. And Karen, I'll ask you about that. What else have we not covered there?
I think that the next thing we need to see is whatever that draft memo says and get some sort of confirmation that it's not going anyplace, especially with this looming over our head. Hopefully it'll get spiked.
Do you think that spike will last?
There's so many things going on. I think it'll go the way of so many of his other promises. I mean, that's what my hope is.
Very good. And Brody, any final word from you on the world situation as we know it today?
I just think that the American people need to understand that this is not a reality show and that this is as ugly as it gets. This is no different than the missiles of October back in 62. This is a return to a global threatening event, and it's serious.
Yes. And Matt, final word from you?
To Karen's point, you know, yes, the country has definitely gotten highly engaged. A portion of it has. We have 300 million people in this country, you know, half of which don't tend to vote in elections anyway. So, you know, we have a massive group of people that are just really disconnected. On the trans ban, you know, the policies in effect are, I mean, the lifting of the ban, the policy that allows individuals to serve openly and authentically is in effect. It has not changed. And I share the same hopes that Karen does that this goes the way that so many of his other promises have.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining me tonight, and I hope this isn't our last conversation. I do hope we put this issue to bed, but you guys are fantastic, and I'd love to have you back talking about more pleasant things other than world annihilation and the beating up of a at-risk population who are wanting to serve so heroically and openly. You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio. I'm Rob Watson, and listen next week. Also catch Out in Santa Cruz, KSCO.com on Saturday nights. We will talk to you then.